Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 109th episode of the Manor Podcast. I'm your co-host, Roger Bodie, joined as always with my best friend and other co-host, Michael Hamilton. Michael, we're back. It's all come full circle. What is old is new again. You know what's really is tripping me up? You know what the throwback draft on Magic the Gathering Arena is?
What's the throwback draft on Magic?
Dominaria.
Okay.
I drafted Dominaria today. For like the first time in like, I don't know, a decade? Is that how old that set is? Am I that old Manny?
I don't think it's a decade. I think it's like, I'd guess like 8 years.
I remember grinding that format for like PTQs when those existed. I guess there were still RCQs then too. I think I lost like my winning Pro Tour invite in that format or something like that. Came out, oh, it's only like 6 years old. Okay, I'm not that old yet.
Right, I overshot with eight.
I knew
it wasn't that old.
I fell back into it like good old times. It was, I remembered that there was like the stupid 4-5 turtle or whatever, 4-6 turtle with hexproof. And then there's this enchantment on Sarah's wings. And you just, and that gives you a creature vigilance and lifelink and flying. And I remember you just put the wings on the turtle and you just win the game. And I hope
they don't edict you and you go to town.
Well, there's lots of tokens floating around and there's only like one uncommon saga edict, I think, in the whole set.
Really?
It's really safe to go for it. The biggest blowout is like if they have enchantment removal, but you're playing best of one on Arena. Well, I was, so nobody's running enchantment removal, so you just do the thing and you win the game as long as you get it.
Sure. It's pretty sick. Sure. So we're talking about Magic today.
Wow. It's Magic the Gathering episode. Who would have thought?
It really does go full circle.
I know we're going to have two listeners on this podcast. I know Ben's going to listen to this podcast, and I know Wesley's going to listen to this podcast. So, boom, we already got two whole listeners on our Magic podcast now.
Yeah, I do think there's a lot of overlap between the Magic and the Flesh and Blood community. So I expect we'll get more than two listeners, but I don't expect this episode to do particularly well. Since we came back, we have not let expectations of view count or numbers really dictate what we talk about. We just talk about the things we want to talk about, and we're playing an Arena Open this weekend. You're planning to go to Atlanta in 5 months or something?
We're getting the band back together. Wesley and Ben are going back to Atlanta or going to Atlanta to play to it. It's going to be my second time in Atlanta, and I get to redeem myself. Roger Bodie redeemed in Atlanta.
Yeah, your first time in Atlanta was not great. So
yeah, we're not getting into that, though. So the Arena Open is Bloomburrow Limited, and I didn't know anything about the new. I didn't know what was in Magic Standard at all a week ago, but they announced, what are the new Grand Prix called or whatever?
I don't know.
I sent you the article. You didn't read it?
I skimmed it, or at least what's read it the called? Headline.
Magic Spotlight Series, a very intuitive name that you wouldn't want to bring back the Grand Prix branding that you had for like what, two decades. I don't know why you'd want to do that. You got to call it something new, like Magic Spotlight Series, so everybody remembers it and knows what that name is and can easily identify with it.
Yeah, I think like they don't want to call it Grand Prix because they're not giving out pro points. They're not. Well, I don't know what's different other than that.
And there's no buys, you know. You can get buys to Grand Prix.
Sure. But that's probably for the best.
Yeah. Oh, man, that was so miserable. It was just like, but like the best players in the world just basically just got to like show up and it's just like, oh, yeah, I got to like sleep in. I win my first three rounds and you only have to like 8-0. So I only have to win four rounds to day two. It was like, I hated that buy system so much.
Yeah.
Or five rounds to day two. I remember just being so defeated as soon as like round three would show up and you're like, I worked hard, I battled for these first three rounds, I had close games and I you know, I had a back and forth and I had to really think and I've been playing three long hours of Magic, and pros are just like, yeah, I just rolled out of bed. And it's like, this doesn't really seem fair.
Yeah, it wasn't, and I think that's why it's probably why they're doing away with that system. And I think that Flesh and Blood and every other card game I've played since Magic has not had a system where competitors are getting three buys in their large open events.
Yeah, that was quite silly.
Yeah, though I think Pokemon does something even more extreme, where like at Worlds, if you get enough points, I think you get to skip all of day one, which is kind of crazy.
That's a lot of buys.
That is a lot of buys. So I said I don't think other games do it, but I think Pokemon actually does. So most games have moved away from that. And Pokemon is just for Worlds. They don't have buys for their like open events.
Fair. Okay. Well, no buys in this weekend's Arena Open, and it's Bloomburrow Limited. It's the cute bunny rabbit, mouse, squirrel set.
Otters.
There's some otters. There's some bats and some lizards.
I've been playing a lot of otters.
Otters aren't very good.
They're not?
No. I don't like otters. I like bunny rabbits. I'm a bunny rabbit gamer.
Okay. All the card. There's a lot of cards that like list like two to four creature types they work on. But there's like 5 to 8 creature types. I don't actually know how many there are. There's more than four.
Yeah, I know, like they kind of split it so like there's like a friendly grouping of animals and like a maligned grouping of animals. Like rats and bats usually go together, and like bunnies and mice usually go together. Birds kind of chill with everybody. Birds are neutral. Birds just kind of hang out with everyone. Everybody's cool with birds, I guess.
Yeah, and then otters. I like the otters.
Nobody cares about otters. They're not really. They're doing their own thing over there.
Okay.
I guess otters care about otters, but they're otter balls.
What?
Oddballs, otter balls.
Oh, okay.
So, you've been playing this format for two whole drafts. And I've been playing this whole format for like 4 days, minus day where I drafted some Dominaria. And so we're pretty much experts, I think. So if you want to stop listening to limited resources and forget everything you learned from Louis Scott Vargas and get all your draft information from us, I think that's that would really behoove you going into this weekend.
Yeah. In all seriousness, if you do play Magic Limited a lot and you have not heard of limited resources, you should check it out. It's a very good resource for limited, believe it or not, from the name. Mm-hmm. But first, listen to us talk about it, because we sure know what's going on. Roger said two drafts, which is kind of generous. I finished one draft and I'm halfway through my second. Well, two games into my second draft on Magic Arena.
Yeah. And you're drafting the worst color. You're drafting blue.
So you told me blue was the worst color. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to draft my pick one, pack one. I'm like, ooh, black removal. I'll take that. And then I get past the blue red rare card.
What was your black removal? What was it? Was it the...
I don't remember. There's a lot of black removal.
There's a lot of black removal in Magic these days.
So I think it was Fel. I think that was my pick one, pack one first draft.
Five mana instant?
No, it's just 2 mana sorcery, destroy target creatures.
That's a good one. Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah, and
nice
then
and efficient.
I got a few more black removal spells, and then I had that blue bomb, and I was picking up cards of like I got a blue-green rare that looked really, really good. But I had all these black cards. I'm like, that's fine. We'll just play three colors. And then as I was drafting the format, I realized there was no mana fixing. So we ended up straight blue black.
There's some mana fixing. There's some common lands that when it enters, you get to name a color.
Yeah, there's Uncharted Haven, common tapped land. When it enters, you name one color and it just produces that color, right?
Yeah. And then there's also this one cost artifact that ETBs, you put any basic land on top of your library, and then one sacrifice to draw a card.
Yeah. So there is one land and one mediocre artifact that mana fixes you.
Yeah.
So the artifact basically costs 2 to cantrip and fix your mana, which is not a great deal. The land is good. The land's very good. But the problem is it's so good that the two color decks also want it, because it's just like Evolving
Fixing.
Wilds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I did not end up with any mana fixing, and I had to go straight blue black in my first draft. And my deck ended up really good. I just like had all the otter divinations and a bunch of removal spells, and it was great.
Yeah, to be fair, I think this is just a high synergy format overall, it seems like, where you need to really be building the entirety of your deck. Like, you need to be on theme with your core animal group and maybe having some odd ball critters here or there, but if you're rabbits, you really want to be going wide on the rabbit thing. If you're frogs, you really want to be blinking. And there's a lot of cards that even when they are monocolored, like they might as well be multicolored. There's it, especially, I guess I'm thinking about the frog cards where there's, where's this guy? He's like three tree scribe. This is an uncommon. He's one in a green, 2/3. Whenever three tree scribe or another creature you control leaves the battlefield without dying, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control. So if you're not blinking things, he's just a 2-mana 2/3. And that's like not very good.
two mana 2/3 is fine.
It's like, okay.
I would happily put a 2-mana 2/3 in basically every deck with no text.
Sure. But then there's like gray ogres and stuff like that. There's like the sticky tongue sentinel, 2 and a green, 3/3 reach. When he enters, return one other target permanent you control to its owner's hand. Like, I don't know, like they're fine, right? But like the synergies that you can get in the set are so much higher than just doing things that are like 3-mana 3/3s or like 2-mana 2/3s.
Yeah. Yeah, just because the floor that the first guy you said is pretty good. I think 2-mana 2/3 being your floor, that doesn't mean you don't want to like push towards trying to unlock what the card can actually do when it's in the support, in a supported deck or in a deck that's supporting well.
Yeah. I'm realizing there's still cards in the set that I haven't even seen. That's just pretty crazy. I've played a good amount of drafts, I thought. I guess it takes a long time to see every card in a set.
Yeah.
Especially at rare.
There are a lot of rares, and you aren't going to see them all in draft. That makes sense.
Yeah. I had the board wipe once. That was pretty cool. The Starfall Invocation. That card's pretty good.
I don't know what that card does.
It's 3 white-white, gift a card, destroy all creatures. If a gift was promised, return a creature card put into your graveyard this way to the battlefield under your control.
Oh, that seems really strong.
Yeah, very good.
Even without the gift part of it, just 5 mana for a Wrath is very good and limited. And the fact that you can give them a card to basically bring back your strongest creature, you get any end of the battlefield triggers again. And even if it doesn't have any, like Wrathing and getting a 4/4 is worth giving them a card.
Yeah. I will say I think I've drafted every animal archetype at least once.
Every animal archetype?
Yeah, I've definitely done blue-black rats. I've done frogs. I've done mice. I've done rabbits. I've done raccoons. I just finished a raccoons one yesterday. I did not like, it was like fine, but my deck felt kind of like mopey overall. Like I didn't feel like I was just kind of like big dumb idiot beaters. And if my beaters somehow got outscaled by the synergistic of other tribes, I guess, I just kind of died. So the deck was not very good. I went like 1-3, I think, with raccoons. I was not happy with it.
Yeah, I realized I said 5 to 8 color or animal types. There's just 10. There's one for each color pair, it looks like.
Yeah. Actually, I don't think I've done Golgari. Golgari, I think, it's because I think people have picked up that black and green are probably the two best colors. So it's hard to get them both open passing to you. Or at least it really hasn't come up in my seat. I feel like I'm usually starting somewhere base white or black or green, and then picking up one of the more tertiary colors a lot.
Sure. I've only done 2 drafts, but I have started with both drafts. I started getting some early black removal and just getting blue rares passed to me and just ending up blue black.
And apparently I'm very wise. I'm realizing I never built an Izzet deck, but Izzet has the worst win rate of all the color combinations, and it's not close. It's at like 56%. I'm looking on this website.
56% sounds good.
The highest win rate is 61%. So it's got a 6-point, and every other, so blue white has 59%, and then every other color combination has a 60%+ win rate.
I assume you're on 17 lands and you're filtering by something specific to get that. I don't know what you're filtering by to get that, but every
I was on traditional game. Draft. Should I go to Premier Draft?
I don't know. My default
Premier Draft, it's different. Premier Draft, it's also the worst at 51%. And Blue White's the second worst at 52%. And Celestia's the best at 57. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because in my drafts, I felt like Blue has some very strong, both uncommons and commons, that I was pretty happy to have. But
I think the only blue cards that really like synergize like more than some of their parts really well are like the frog cards.
Okay.
And everything else, like they might be okay individually, but I just don't think they lead to very high highs and like their synergistic ceilings or whatever.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah, I have definitely that. Just been like going on raw power level of just like taking like a lot of like instants and sorceries. Like I have both my decks have had multiple copies of the Divination and then at least one copy of the Mind Spiral, the 5-mana draw 3.
That's a good, I like that card.
I've also been getting Daring Wave Rider. I have one in both decks. It's a 6-mana 4/4 that when it enters, you can cast an instant sorcery from your graveyard with cost 4 or less. And both drafts, I've paired it up with black removal and it's worked really well.
Yeah, I was doing a lot of the very similar things in my early drafts where like I was playing like three colors, splash in like the mind card that you just talked about.
Mind Spiral.
And I was like, yeah, we can just splash this easy. I'll just use my little artifact and grab my island, play my Mind Spiral, whoop, 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 grind. This game's go forever. And then I got to the higher leagues and I'm dying on like turn 6. And I'm like, this format's pretty aggressive, actually.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The best deck I've drafted so far, not close, has been Boros Mice. I had the nuttiest nut, craziest mice deck. It was I think I went 7-0, and my opponents were scooping on like turn 4 in my last three matches in a row.
What were you doing?
So I had the multicolor rare mouse. I had.
You're gonna have to give more detail than that.
I know. I'm looking for him. I'm looking for him. Mabel, heir to Cragflame. He costs 1 red-white. Other mice you control get +1/+1. He's a 3/3. When Mabel, heir to Cragflame, enters, create Cragflame, a legendary colorless equipment artifact token. With equip, creature gets +1/+1 and has vigilance, trample, haste with equip 2.
So, and what's its base stats again? Sorry.
3/3. So it's a 3/3 mouse lord for 1 red-white, and you get this sword.
That seems really strong.
Yes. Have you seen this uncommon enchantment? So there's a bunch of like talent series in the set, and there is one called Blacksmith's Talent. It costs 1 red, and when it enters, you create a sword token equipment that where equipped creature gets +1/+1, equipped 2. So not very good. Mm-hmm. You can level it up, pay 2 and a red. At the beginning of your combat on your turn, you can attach target equipment you control to up to 1 target creature you control. So you get the free target on a mouse by moving the sword around. So that's pretty good. Then level 3, you get 3 red. During your turn, equipped creatures you control have double strike and haste.
That does sound really strong.
You just go Blacksmith's Talent, Mabel. All your mice now have their target benefit and double strike, haste, +2/+2, trample, million keywords. And then the icing on the cake was there's the silliest. They also gave an amazing card advantage mouse in white. It is Whisker Veil Forerunner, which costs 3 and a white. So it's like the top end of my curve. It's a 3/4, so 3 mana, or so 4 mana, 3/4. I just Valiant like all the other mice do. So when it becomes the first time it becomes target of a spell and ability you control, look at the top 5 cards of your library. You may reveal a creature card with mana value 3 or less among them and put it onto the battlefield. If you don't put it onto the battlefield, you put it in your hand.
Yeah, that sounds really strong. That's a rare though, right?
Yeah. So it was just curving out the talent into my Mabel, into my Whisker Veil Forerunner, and my opponents just scooped on link turn before. They were like, this is ridiculous. Like, what are we doing? This is like a constructed deck, I think.
Sure. So you think Boros Mice has constructed legs?
I think I was looking at him on MTG Goldfish. I was looking at some standard decks.
Okay.
Because I got to know the standard metagame for Atlanta, you know?
Yeah, Magic cards have gotten a lot more powerful since back in the day.
Yeah, I feel like such a boomer. I feel like such a boomer, dude. Like, I'm just like, there's this, he's in the Bloomvale too. He's, where's this guy? He's such a cool guy. Thunder Trap Trainer. He's a one in a blue. He's a 1/2. And when this creature enters, look at the top four cards of your library. You may reveal a non-creature, non-land from among them and put them into your hand and put the rest in your bottom of your library in random order. Do you remember Augur Bolas? You remember
Augur? Yeah, I got sick.
Yeah. And he has Offspring 4. So that means for 6 mana, you can like double Augur Bolas in the end game. Like once you've like, when you like need to dig for like specific cards and things like that. So very powerful.
Yeah, you know how I said I've been getting the blue bombs in the drafts. I got one of these guys like 5th pick.
Yeah.
It's been very good. I've offspringed it every time I've cast it.
Yeah. They gave us better Augur Bolas, but they also gave us worse Restoration Angel. There's the bird Salvation Swan for 3 and a white flash flying 3/3. When Salvation Swan or another bird you control enters exile up to one target creature you control without flying, returns to the battlefield under its control under its owner's control with a flying counter at the beginning of the next end step.
Yeah, I think the fact that it re-triggers on other birds and you give the flying counter, it makes me think it's not just like strictly worse than Restoration Angel, but losing the 1 point of toughness is...
And not being immediate relevant. Flicker. It's end of turn flicker.
Yeah.
So I think the whole package, I think, is worse than Restoration Angel. But like, I just want to... I built this deck. I built my 4 Thunder Trap Trainer, my 4 Salvation Swan. I'm like, this has to be good enough. I remember 2012... I was casting these cards together, and then you get some more enter the battlefield effects going on in your deck, and then you play in your blue-white controls, and nope. I was dying on, like, turn 4.
You're missing the Thrag Tusks.
They printed a Thrag Tusk. So, funny that you mentioned Thrag Tusk. They printed this card.
That was part of the package.
You get Beza the Bounding Spring now instead, which is it's a mythic from Bloomborough, so you might run into this card at some point if you're unlucky. It costs 2 white. It's a 4/5. When Beza the Bounding Spirit enters, create a treasure token if an opponent has more lands than you. Gain 4 life if an opponent has more life than you. Create 2 1/1 blue fish creature tokens if an opponent has more creatures than you. Draw a card if an opponent has more cards in hand than you.
I've actually seen this card because I have been out of the regular limited streets, but LSV, who you mentioned earlier on Limited Resources, he does these cube draft videos, and I've been watching some of them, and this guy is in the new cube.
I would believe that. He's pretty ridiculous. But then you could also Restoration or Salvation Swan your Bezas, and I was like, this has to be good. Nope.
Maybe it's the surrounding cards that are the issue, you know?
Yeah. They only printed the world's best cancel. Like I think it's the closest card I've ever seen to Cryptic Command that I think they'll ever print again, maybe. That I don't card. Know it's not from this set. Let me pull it up.
Okay. I probably have no idea what it is if it's not from this set.
It's called 3 Steps Ahead. It was in Outlaws of Thunder Junction as a just a base casting cost of a blue. And it has the spree mechanic. So basically it has all these different modes, and the different modes can be tacked on for extra mana costs.
Okay.
So his first spree is 1 and a blue counter target spell. So then you add that to his base cost. So it'll be 1 blue counter target spell. You get a cancel effect. Cool.
Okay.
You can then pay. Its second mode is 3 generic resources. Create a token of a copy of target artifact or creature you control. Okay, so like you can go like
4 mana to copy something, or 6 mana for counter and copy.
Yeah, so then it would be 4 blue copy a thing, and then it's 2 resources, draw 2 cards, then discard a card. So most of the time I've been casting this card, it's been 3 blue counter target spell, draw 2, discard 1. Very close to Cryptic Command.
That's 5 resources. That's a lot worse than Cryptic Command.
Sure, yeah. But like, Cryptic Command's broken at 4. We all know this. But so that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah.
Is Cryptic Command broken? Is it seeing any play in Modern? I think it's this broken. Is Boomer.
It's too... it's too powerful, Michael.
I don't think Cryptic Command's good enough in the current game.
It's too powerful.
I'm not a Modern expert. It could be. Maybe it is good. I don't know. But I don't think it sees play.
It doesn't. I know this. I looked at Modern decks recently and it sees no play. But you know, it did back in my day.
Yeah, back in your day.
It was too powerful. But yeah.
I am curious how my drafts will look once I am no longer in silver, because Magic Arena has this wonderful thing where every time you don't play the game for 6 months, you drop back to bronze 5 or whatever the bottom of bronze is. Mm-hmm. And you gotta play, climb back up. So
yeah, I think as long as you avoid blue red, I think you're in good shape. I've even had good blue white decks. A lot of people are really low on blue white. But I think I had 3 Plume Creed Mentors, which is 1 blue white flying 2/3. Whenever Plume Creed Mentor or another creature you control flying enters, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control without flying. So you play your first one and it gets a +1/+1 counter. You play your second one and then you put 2 +1/+1 counters on your creature without flying. You play your third one and then you're putting 3 +1/+1. And then you play for every creature with flying, you repeat. You just spiral out of control. Sweet.
Yeah, I don't think you even need the second one. That just sounds really good.
Yeah, I think the blue white deck is not ideal, but I think it's fine. Like, I think as long as you get the pieces, it seems like a reasonable deck to me. Funnily enough, the one that I dislike more that you've now drafted twice is Dimir, is the blue black rats deck.
Yeah, there's not very many rats in my deck. I feel like I am blue cards and all the good blue cards and black removal spells.
Yeah, it's a classic combination.
Yeah, the only rat in my deck that I have right now is, I guess I've got Mind Drill Assailant, which is just a 4-mana 2/5 with that surveils. If it sits around, it's just like filler, like 23rd playable or something. And then I've got the blue black gold card Tidecaller Mentor, which is just a 3-mana 3/3 menace that if you have Threshold when it enters, you can bounce something, but that doesn't come up. It's just a 3-mana 3/3 menace, which is okay. Filler also.
Yeah. You don't have. My favorite Dimir or like rat card is the uncommon Mind Whisker. Do you have any Mind Whiskers in your deck? I love this guy. He's 2 and a blue, 3/2. At the beginning of your upkeep, surveil 1. Threshold, as long as there are 7 more cards in your graveyard, creatures your opponents control get -1/-0. I had 3 of these in play at one point. It was sick.
Did all their creatures get -3/-0?
Yeah. It was a real good.
I do actually have that guy in this deck. So I've got my deck pulled up on the side. I didn't have him in my first deck, though.
Yeah. I just like the, if nothing else, I like the beginning of Europe Keep Surveil one. Like, the free surveil is really powerful.
Yeah.
You got any Spell Gyres? I like Spell Gyre quite a bit.
What does Spell Gyre do?
It's 2 blue-blue, counter targets. It's a modal spell with 2 modes.
I had one in my first
surveil
deck.
2, and then draw 2 cards. I like the card quite a bit.
Yeah, I had one in my first deck, and then this deck, I took something over it. But that card is sweet with Daring Wave Rider as well, where you, like, the first time you cast it, you counter something, and then you play your 4-drop, or your 6-drop, the Surveil 2, or draw 2. Mm-hmm. It's really strong. Well, it feels really strong. I don't know if it's actually really strong compared to what other people are doing, but...
Yeah.
And in my silver games, it has felt very strong.
Yeah, I think my Rude Awakening came with blue was I was drafting over the weekend and I got like a second pick Shoreline Lunar, which is 1 and a blue, 1/1 uncommon. Shoreline Lunar can't be blocked. Threshold, whenever Shoreline Lunar deals combat damage to a player, draw a card, then discard a card. Unless 7 or more cards in your graveyard, then you just draw a card.
Okay.
So it's just a 1-mana or 2-mana 1/1. When you have Threshold on hit, draw a card, can't be blocked. I was like, this card's like, I've seen this card do really cool things. I went blue white, got some Plume Creed mentors. I was like, I'm gonna put some counters on this thing. I have my 2-minute unblockable guy, and my opponent was like, that's cool, here's like 15 damage on like turn 5. And I was like, I'll attack you for 1 unblockable.
Yeah, that card does sound very, very slow, and it doesn't give you any defensive value, so I could see it being
being rough. But it's on hit draw card.
I like draw cards. On hit loot a card until you get threshold.
Yeah. Oh well.
The card I do like, the 2-mana, the 2/2 blue creature I have liked, is Thought Shucker. It's a 1 and a blue for a 1/3 rat rogue. Oh, I do have rats, okay. And threshold, you can pay 1 and a blue to put a +1/+1 counter on a draw card.
Once per turn.
Once, period.
Only once. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Once,
yeah,
period.
Yeah, yeah.
But I found it just like a 2-drop, a 1/3 is fine. It's not great, but later in the game, you can kind of get your card back and get a 2/4, which is pretty solid.
I think I like the Night Whirl Hermit, the 2 and a blue, 1/4 vigilance, and then threshold, it gets +1/+1, can't be blocked, so then it turns into a 2/4 unblockable vigilance for 3, which is pretty good.
I just don't care if my guys are unblockable. I'm going to outcard everybody. That's my game plan. I got a bunch of the Pearl of Wisdom, the Otter Divinations, and Mind Spirals. That's been my...
You got any Dazzling Denials or Long Rivers Pool for some counterspell action?
The counterspells. Nope, no counterspells in this deck. My last deck had a few.
You have Spelljire. You're lying to me.
No, my first deck had Spelljire. My second deck doesn't.
Okay. Fair.
My first deck had... It had the blue-blue counter target creature spell, and you can gift them something and counter anything instead of creature spell.
Yeah.
I don't remember if it was a fish or a card, but you had to gift them something.
I like the Bats deck a lot. I like the Orzhov, like, Bats gain and drain strategy a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a pretty hard to pull off and requires a lot of pieces, though, unfortunately. I think you definitely need a couple, or at least one Starscape Cleric, which is an uncommon. It's 1 and a blue, 2/1. It has Offspring for 2 and a black.
One and a black?
2 and a black. So for 5.
So, no, what's its base cost? You said 1 and a blue.
1 and a black, sorry.
Okay.
So it's a 2/1 flying, can't block. Whenever you gain life, each opponent loses 1 life. So then you can like offspring it. So then whenever you gain life, your opponent loses 2 life. And then there's like a bunch of like gain life effects scattered across black and white.
Yeah. Yeah, that card does sound pretty good. I saw some of the Bats. You said Bats are the black white ones.
Yeah, Bats are black and white.
Yeah, there's one that it's like a 1/3 that drains when it attacks, and then I have a 3-mana 2/3 in my blue black deck that when it attacks you gain a life.
Mm-hmm. That's the hybrid mana one.
Yeah.
The other uncommon, well, the multicolor uncommon for Bats is Star Seer Mentor, which is 3 black white. 3/5 flying vigilance. At the beginning of your end step, if you gained or lost life this turn, target opponent loses 3 life unless they sacrifice a non-land permanent or discard a card.
It's cool to see that effect come back. I think there was a card back when I played. It was like black, black X, and your opponent does this X times where they either lose 3 life, sacrifice a permanent, or discard a card.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool that they've kind of like kept that. You get to choose which thing, but all these things are like taxing you pretty heavily.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at it. I think I'm just not a Gruul gamer. I think I should just avoid the Gruul archetype. I think I'm fine with every other color combination, actually. Maybe not Izzet. I think I'm going to try to actively avoid Izzet and Gruul. So I guess I should lean away from red as a base.
Yeah, it sounds like you just don't like red cards.
The red cards are... The interesting thing is I don't hate intrinsically the baseline red cards, a lot of them. So I guess a common I kind of do. But I like the red uncommons quite a bit in the rares. So I kind of get trapped because I think in my last... I went into raccoons, but I picked a Manifold Mouse, which is 1 red, 1 2, and has Offspring 2. So for 4, you can get 2 copies of this guy. And at the beginning of your upkeep... Or beginning of combat on your turn, target mouse you control gains your choice of double strike or trample until end of turn. So you get like 2 targets for your mice effects. Mm-hmm. And so like getting double strike and trample is like really powerful. I was like, oh, I've had good success with that guy. Oh, I had that guy in my Broken Boros deck too. If you just name a like broken rare mouse, I probably had in my broken mouse deck.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I like that guy quite a bit. But then mice weren't open. I never saw like any mice. And then all the red cards I were getting were like raccoons based. So I didn't even want to play it in like my end of the deck. I was sad. I did have a Takeout of Trash, though. That's a solid red card. That's a fine baseline red card, I think.
I think Takeout of the Trash is quite good. This is the two mana instant. I picked one of these early before I realized that was blue black and not black red or Grixis or something. Mm-hmm. And it's a two mana instant, deal 3 damage to a creature or planeswalker. And if you control a raccoon, you can discard a card to draw a card, rummage.
Yeah. And red also, I think, has just the best one drops, which kind of suckers me in sometimes. So you got at uncommon, you have Heartfire Hero, which is one mana, 1/1 Valiant. Whenever Heartfire Hero becomes the target of spell or ability for the first time each turn, put a +1/+1 counter on it. So it's just like a one mana, 1/1 that turns into like a 2/2, 3/3, 4/4. It's like you target it more and more. And when it dies, mm-hmm. it deals damage equal to its power to each opponent. So it's just like, it's like a beater that grows and then deals the damage on the way out a lot of the time.
Yeah, the difference between Valiant and the mechanic that we had forever ago when I played Heroic, where Heroic you have to target them with a spell, but Valiant mm-hmm. you can target with a spell or ability. It's so much easier to trigger, especially with like equipment or creatures abilities. It just comes up a lot more.
Yeah. And then the other one mana card that I really like in red, it's a rare though, it's called Hired Claw. It's a 1/1/2. Whenever you attack with one or more lizards, and he's a lizard mercenary, Hired Claw deals 1 damage to target opponent, and then for 1 and a red, put a +1/+1 counter on Hired Claw. Activate only if an opponent lost life this turn and only once per turn. So you play him on turn 1, turn 2, you can attack, ping him, and then immediately put a +1/+1 counter on him, and then you're attacking for 2/3, and then you can just repeat that process and he scales.
Yeah, makes sense.
I like that guy. So both those cards, they sucker me in a lot. I like those guys. They lure me. But then I don't like a lot of the other red cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know most of the uncommons and rares of colors other than blue. I feel like I just know a lot of the blue ones because I keep getting them.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't think I played a lot with like the blue black, like, in fact, I don't think I've ever even seen this guy. The Vren, the Relentless, 2 blue-black, 3/4, War 2. If a creature an opponent controls would die, exile instead. Beginning of each end step, create X 1/1 black rat creature tokens. With this creature, gets +1/+1 for each other rat you control, where X is the number of creatures your opponent controls that were exiled this turn. Oh, it's not very good. That explains why.
Yeah. I didn't see it. In this draft, I actually opened that guy and took a black removal spell over it.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, the blue-black multicolor cards are not really where I want to be.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Which, in red-blue, it kind of, like, I don't like the uncommon, and they have the Planeswalker with Rao, but I like the, if I'm playing, like, either a base blue or a base red deck, but not necessarily is it, I really like Tempest Angler, which is one hybrid blue-red, hyper-blue-red, 2/2. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, put a +1/+1 counter on Tempest. I really like scaling cards. I don't know if you noticed this yet, but I really like a card where I can play it, and then it's going to get better as I do my game plan. I like that effect. I don't have to do a lot of thinking. I'm just going to play my cards, and the card that I played is just going to get better and better and better and better, you know?
Mm-hmm. You like the cards that say, you gotta use a removal spell on me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The green-black one also says that as well. The Corpse Berry Cultivator, which is 1 black-green, black-green hybrid, 2/3. Beginning of combat each turn, you may forage, and whenever you forage, put a +1/+1 counter on Corpse Berry Cultivator. Like, this card can spiral out of control too. Slower, yeah. But yeah.
And this will trigger even if other things forage, right?
Yeah.
That does seem very good. Fairly good, at least. You do need lots of cards getting into your discard, but yeah, it can get big.
Yeah, I think the saddest thing is that there's like the EDH cards that are just mucking up my draft a lot.
What are the EDH cards?
The 3-mana guys are the 3-color things, like Balin the Haymaker. I got trapped with this guy one time. I was like, oh, I'm base green white, I can splash red and play my 4/3. I got some tokens flying around, and he's like, mm-hmm. So he's red, green, white, 4/3, tap 2, untap tokens you control, add one mana of any color, tap 3, untap tokens you control, draw a card, tap 4, untap untap tokens you control, put 3/+1/+ counters on Balin the Haymaker, can trample 10 a turn. So it's like, ooh, I got tokens, I can do Balin, and then I would play Balin, I'd have like one other token on the battlefield. I'm like, oh, this guy sucks.
Yeah, on top of like the ability not really seeming like it's designed for the limited format, there's also just not good color fixing like I talked about earlier. So it's pretty hard to play three color cards, especially three color cards that you want to play like early in the game.
Yeah. Green does have the two and a green make a food or whatever. Get a land out of your deck, right? Heap Harvest, two green. When Heap Harvest enters and when you sacrifice it, you may search your library for a basic land card and put it onto the battlefield, tap, then shuffle, and then two and a sacrifice it. You gain 3 life.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I like this card quite a bit when I was playing against bad people, and then I started playing against good people, and then I was like, oh, this card's so slow.
Yeah, you really need to be doing like something pretty good on your first two turns to like buy you the time to play a 3-mana Rampant Growth, or you need to be doing something very, very good on that turn after you play the 3-mana Rampant Growth, some very, very high impact 5-drop.
Yeah. Do you have any gift cards in your deck? Let's talk about gifting. How do you feel gifting. About gifts?
I have Mind Spiral. My first draft also had, it was a 3-mana black removal spell that said kill a creature and you lose 2 life unless you gift them a food, then you don't lose 2 life.
Yeah.
That one was great. I almost always gifted them a food because I was not trying to win by killing them. I just was like, have a food. I'd rather have, I'll give you 2-mana, gain 3 life so that I don't lose 2 life. That's a good deal. If I could have us both just gain real life over and over again, I would do it a lot of the time with the deck that I'm drafting.
It's like have the secret bat synergy where you want to lose the life so your bats all trigger.
Oh, that makes sense. That is a pretty good synergy, but this card is just like 3-mana kill something, which is very good in limited.
Yeah, at instant speed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I give my opponents gifts like 90% of the time. I want to know if that's like right or wrong, if I'm like over gifting my opponents.
It depends a lot on the card effect. Like the rare Wrath you talked about, you should usually be gifting your opponent a card because getting your best creature that got Wrath the way back is usually better than a random card they're going to get.
Right.
I think you said that you were gifting them a fish most of the time when you were casting Mind Spiral, which that feels a little bit weird to me because the decks that want to be casting Mind Spiral are not like 5-mana draw 3 other decks are trying to like clunk up the board and stall things out. They're not trying to like aggressively tap your opponent's stuff down. But if you're going to die if you don't gift them a fish because they've got some evasive thing that you just need to stall, then it makes
sense. Yeah, it's like usually on like a flyer or something like that. It's like I'll tap your flyer or like your beater or whatever. Like you have like a 1/1 and like a 4/3 or something like that, and my board's like a 1/1 and a 2/1 or something like that. Then like I'll tap their beater so I have more time.
Yeah, usually you want to be using like those kind of tap and stun things effects offensively because you get like 2 turns of their guy being tapped on defense, but only 1 turn of their guy being tapped on offense. So, because you'll tap their guy and they'll have a stun counter. So then on their next turn, it doesn't untap and it loses a stun counter. Sorry, you play the card, you tap their guy, you get an attack. Then on their turn, it doesn't untap because of the stun counter. Then you can attack again before, and then it'll untap. So they only miss out on 1 attack with it versus missing out on 2 block steps.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. Yeah. I will say the guy that he's not a gift, but Splash Lasser, which is an uncommon blue card, which is 3 and a blue, 3/3, offspring, 1 and a blue. When this creature enters, tap 1 target creature and put a stun counter on it. I win a lot of games with that guy. I'm just like, I get to 6 mana, I got some idiots on the board, I offspring him.
And you tap 2 of their things for an extra turn.
Bounce him or flicker him or somehow tap down their guys again, beat again.
Yeah. That win game. I think that card is quite good because it has offspring. I think without offspring, it'd just be like a pretty mopey card, but
I agree.
The 6 mana, the kicker mode on it's very, very strong.
Yeah. Everything's kicker.
Yeah. Everything is kicker.
Okay. I'm curious how Sealed plays.
Yeah. We're both planning to do the Arena Open this weekend, so we should try to get some Sealed games in before then. Day one's Sealed, right? Or is it all draft?
It's at day one Sealed.
Okay. Yeah, maybe we can do some online Sealed pools. Figure it out.
How do you do that?
I think Arena just has Sealed events, right? It usually does.
I don't know. I didn't see it. But there's no like sealed deck generator. Could we do that? Is there like a?
I'm sure there is.
And then play on a TTS app or something. Or we got an LGS. An LGS around us probably sells Boom Burrow. We can just go buy 6 Packy Dews.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure we could. We'll figure something out.
What are you doing Friday?
What am I doing Friday? A bunch of yard work.
Let's clear our schedules and go buy some Bloom Burrow packs and play some sealed at our LGS. It'll be fun.
I don't know if I'm doing that. I really don't like owning physical cards. Yeah. If I could play at all the card game tournaments, I don't know if I've talked about this on the podcast, but if I could play at all the card game tournaments and never have to deal with cards, that would be like the life. Cause I love how card games play. I love all the strategy and decision-making. I love the deck building process, but like managing a collection, owning cards, getting cards, buying and selling cards, everything about the cards themselves, other than like the game part of them, I'm not a big fan of.
Yeah. You saw for the last 2-3 weeks, you've been coming over to when we've been playing Sorcery. I just have cards all over my pool table at the moment because I've been slowly sorting them, but really they're just sitting there in a pile because I have very limited time and I don't really want to spend hours upon hours upon hours sitting there sorting through cards. But I need to do it because the reason why I'm sorting all my Flesh and Blood cards is because I bought 2 copies of Balance of Justice. So like I didn't know I already had a copy of Balance of Justice, and then I bought a copy of Balance of Justice. So I spent like the extra $130 for no reason. I was like, I should organize my collection again.
No, you won't do it again.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Well, most of the set by next week, we can talk about maybe limited first impressions for what Rosetta next week. So many card games, dude. There's so many card games.
Yeah, for sure. I think that we're both going to Florida in a week and a half. So next week we can kind of talk about what we're expecting, what our initial impressions are, what we're planning to play in the sealed format. We're just going to force a hero in sealed. That's definitely how that works.
That's how the first Aria set worked. You just forced Briar, and whoever was better at piloting Briar in your seal pool, you got there.
That's true. We don't have very much for the set yet, but I would be surprised if that's the case. I feel like LSS has gotten a lot better at designing sealed formats. I think the last 2 sealed formats have been quite good.
Yeah, the cap to 30 cards, not that matters so much in the Briar format, but most importantly, there's no Rosetta Thorn. So the weapons that they previewed so far are not Rosetta Thorn.
Yeah, they've definitely toned back limited weapons quite a bit. I think the best one that I remember having any time recently is Mandible Claw.
Yes, Mandible Claw, but you can only play one you can only play one because you could theoretically somehow play Reinar, but...
No. Yeah, you could play 2. You just had to register Reinar.
Yeah, and then you had to register Reinar.
Yeah, so I feel like I've kind of taken like mostly a break from playing card games competitively for a little while. I haven't been doing a lot, but getting back into it, playing Magic this weekend, playing Rosetta Limited next weekend, and then also going to Worlds in 2 months. I'm really looking forward to it.
And booking a trip to Atlanta.
We'll see about that one. I've got a lot of
time. I'm honestly also excited for the Living Legend calling in Chicago as well in December.
Yeah. I'm planning to go to Portland also. My brother lives out in Portland, so I'm going to go to the calling out there.
I was going to go. Now you're making me want to re-go to Portland. I canceled Portland to go to Atlanta because I was like, I don't need to go see Wesley in Portland. I can go to Atlanta. And then now it's like, if you're going, you could stay with your family over there, and then I could stay with Wesley.
That is my plan. I have to stay with my brother.
I'll talk to the wife about it. We'll see.
Okay. It's I feel like there weren't like any U.S. callings for so long. There were just like these majors that were too close together and no callings. And now end of the year is coming up. There's a bunch of callings happening. There's Worlds. It's a good time. Good time to be playing card games.
Yeah. Now that we're 50 minutes in and nobody's listening anyways, not that anybody listened to begin with, but I'm really curious to see how the return of this Magic Spotlight series will like affect calling schedules, since they're both hosted through Star City Games. I think somebody, I forget who, somewhere said like they hope that there's a calling weekend on the same weekend as like a Spotlight series. And I can't ever see that happening. And I actively don't want that happening, because I feel like if a calling is doing super well and the Spotlight series is doing super well, there's only so much room in a venue, and I don't really want one event to cannibalize the other.
Sure, sure. I think that it would not surprise me if we end up getting both happening at the same venue. I know back when Flesh and Blood was first like growing, our early callings a lot of the time had Magic events happening. As like there was like,
yeah, but I think nobody was playing back like Magic then. Like, I remember I had to pull up this text. It was from like 2 or 3 years ago. There was like a Magic 20 or 30K or something like that at one of the Flesh and Blood events. It had 200 people. And I texted one of my old Magic friends. I was like, are you playing this 200 person 30K? And he was like, no, I wish. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, that's pretty good EV. 200 person 30K.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Magic had nobody playing it for a long time. I wonder how popular the Spotlight series is going to be. Because like, for those who weren't around back in Magic's heyday, Magic tournaments used to like easily clear like 1,200. Like Star City Games got like 1,200, and like Grand Prix were like 2K, right?
I don't know if SCG opens. SCG opens definitely averaged significantly less than 1,200 people. I think they averaged like 500 to 800 people, but that's like the size of like some of our bigger callings in Flesh and Blood, which is pretty crazy. And then Grand Prix were like, I think the average Grand Prix was more than 2,000 people, at least in like the peak time. There was like probably a year where the average Grand Prix was like 3K.
I remember they were so big. The one in I was at the one in Vegas where there was so many people, they had to split into two stupid Grand Prix.
That was a software issue that I think they fixed since then. But that was like, there's not, the only reason they had to split it into two Grand Prix was because the software couldn't handle it.
Yeah. But I was there. I was in one of them. A day two. Yeah. I like think top that was 64 or something.
I think that was the first Modern Masters Limited.
Second.
Second Modern Masters Limited. Okay.
Yeah. So I was so excited. I had a Karn and I had a Bitter Blossom in my first draft, and I was like X2. And I was like, I can't lose. I got Karn and Bitter Blossom, and I went 0-3, and I was so sad.
That is sad. Bitter Blossom is a really powerful card.
Yeah.
I don't even know what the Karn did.
It's the 7-mana Karn. You know what that did.
Oh, I know what that guy. I played Tron.
Yeah. I was about to say, you know
three, the 3-mana guy.
Yeah. No, the 7-mana guy.
You tap on 3 lands, a mine, a power plant, and a tower, and you play your 3-mana planeswalker.
Yeah. I pulled up, I remember this event, Grand Prix Richmond in 2013-2014, with 4,303 people. That was the first time like the event like hard capped, and like I posted on my Twitter account. Like that was when I learned the lesson of, if you're going to an event,
register for Rosetta.
Yes, register for the event before you fly across the country or travel across the country and book hotels, like, because you never know. Like, that was just the one where I was like, some event could just spike in popularity, and you don't want to be having all these travel arrangements and just locked out of the event because you did everything else but register.
Makes sense. I'm gonna do that once we hop off here. Get registered for Rosetta. I booked my hotel. I booked my flight. Haven't registered.
Yeah. But a lot of these, in the 2013, basically going forward, average attendance was like 12 to 1800. It looks like.
For Grand Prix.
Yeah. Okay. With some huge spikes here or there, depending on like timing and formats and all that stuff.
Yeah. I think attendance probably fell at some point when they announced Pro League stuff, because your pro points became pointless, and that made a lot of inspiring people not have a reason to go to Grand Prix anymore, aspiring pros.
Where's this one? Detroit. Was it Detroit? Yeah. So towards the end, yeah, once they got rid of pro points, I remember going to this one in 2018 with Ben, because we both day two'd and like made like top 64, and like, cause it was so like, but there were no pro points, so it didn't like, it was just like a little bit of money, and we were so depressed. and it was only 706 people.
Jeez.
But here I am playing Magic again. Woo! What's old is new again, baby.
Yeah. What's old is new again, I guess. Bloomborough, what's it called? Bloomborough has been fun in the 1.5 drafts I've played.
Bloomberg. That just got me. That's all. That's the Financial Times. It's just a frog investing in stocks.
I'll buy the Otter meme coin or whatever. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's been fun. I think the next Magic set in true Magic fashion comes out in like 2 weeks though. So like, oh well.
So this is like the end of format Arena Limited Open.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're coming in late with our first impressions came at the last.
We can name it Magic's Bloomberg set limited impressions.
I think I'm going to go with Michael and Roger's limited discussion featuring special guest Magic the Gathering.
Okay. Magic the Gathering. It does complete our special guest month.
It does. It gets through our last arc of special guests.
All the great Flesh and Blood important people. Not all of them, but many great Flesh and Blood important people. And then for the fourth week, we're like, here's Magic the Gathering. All right. So anything else before we wrap this up?
I'm all out. I'm all right. Good to end it before we go any more off the rails.
I'll let you do the honors, as is tradition.
Okay. Well, the next time you're playing with cute bunny rabbits and mice, always remember, mind your manners.